A sermon by Reverend Richard A. Ram, preached at Christ Community Church in Spring Lake, Michigan, on February 10, 2002, entitled, From Feast to Fast, Honoring the Human. The texts for the sermon are Psalm 103, verses 1 through 18, and Matthew 11, verses 2 through 19. Copyright, Grand Valley State University.
Last week, as I suppose many of you, watched the Super Bowl. The Super Bowl, which happened in New Orleans, and because of 9/11, got shoved back a week and consequently moved right into the center of Mardi Gras. And as we've come to expect with television these days, it's a string of commercials interrupted occasionally by football. And then even less frequently, an interview of some interest. And with Mardi Gras being on in New Orleans, its capital, and all of that, in the midst of the Super Bowl celebration, one of the TV journalists interviewed a local New Orleans person who talked about the celebration of Mardi Gras as he had experienced it growing up as a second or third or fourth generation New Orleans person. And he made the point that it was a wonderful festival, it was a wonderful family time, that it was really a time for family and friends to enjoy each other and to celebrate together. And he made the point that what the media camera catches about Mardi Gras is not really what it's all about. It's not, after all, he said, one big orgy. It is just a good, decent family celebration. And I'm sure that he is right, and I am equally sure that the cameras will try to find whatever is at its naughtiest to bring us from New Orleans and the Mardi Gras celebration. But as the interview was going on, I thought to myself, a native of New Orleans who celebrated many Mardi Gras, I wonder if you really know the deep background of Mardi Gras. Because he gave no indication of knowing that place out of which it arose, or the reason for it arising, which is the fact that the wisdom of the ancient church, there was a recognition that it is necessary to have a certain rhythm and balance in life. And so that the Christian year is structured such that one moves from feast to fast to feast to fast. C.S. Lewis in his Screwtape Letters has the old devil commiserating about God's wisdom in giving people that rhythm, feast to fast, where it's always the same, yet always new. And in the interview, I didn't see any recognition or any acknowledgement of that background, really, in the church, in the ancient church, where on the threshold, for example, of moving into the solemn and sobering period of Lent of 40 days, the license was given to have a grand party, to pull out all the stops, and to celebrate. This morning we have a taste of it with some foot-tapping music, and there are punchkis, as I mentioned, and you're invited to indulge to your heart's content. But in the real celebration of Mardi Gras, there is this full release of all that is a part of the human person, the human animal. The recognition that to honor the human is to give opportunity for the expression of the full gamut of that which constitutes us as human beings. And so Mardi Gras was a party that started out as an opportunity to let go and to release and to get it all out of your system And as you moved into the somber time of Lent, which was marked in the tradition of the church by self-denial, which we have come to mark more in terms of the cultivation of some added dimension of our spiritual experience, not necessarily repression or self-denial, but spiritual enrichment. Nonetheless, in the ancient practice of the church, there was this emphasis on self-denial, and prior to it, on the threshold of it, a grand party. And there was wisdom in that, because we are, after all, creatures who are composed of body and soul and spirit and material physicality, sensuality and spirituality, all dwelling within our skin. But of course, the church has always also recognized the risk and has been squeamish about the expression of our humanity in such a fashion. And I was reminded of this when, in a book that I read when I was gone, Constantine's Sword by James Carroll. You'll probably be hearing me quote this thing a time or two every week for the next 10 weeks or so, because it's got to be in one of the 10 best books I've ever read. James Carroll was raised a very observant Roman Catholic. In his childhood and his adolescence, he had a very devout mother who led him on pilgrimages and exposed him to the finest and the richest of spiritual experience in the Catholic tradition, to the extent that he eventually became a priest, ordained priest, and even a member of the Jesuit order. Eventually, James Carroll came to his own personal conviction that that was not what he was cut out for. He left the order. He is a writer, a journalist. He's married. He has a son and a daughter. He continues, according to his own description of himself, as a faithful, if critical, Roman Catholic. The point of my story is this. The church has always been squeamish about the expression of the human, particularly in its sensuality, its physicality, in its bodily expression. And James Carroll, wanting to bring his wife and his two children on a pilgrimage to Europe, where he had grown up, his father being in the upper echelons of the military in Germany after the Second World War. And they came eventually to St. Peter's itself in Rome. And as they came, a Vatican guard stopped them and wouldn't let them enter because his little daughter, just a child, had her knees exposed because she had a little mini skirt on. And James Carroll, who was raised in the very heart and center of the church, deeply traditioned, priest and Jesuit and all the rest, says in this book, when he saw his little daughter humiliated at the doors of St. Peter, suddenly it rushed over him. Everything for which he had experienced the failure of the Catholic Church, that failure being the denial of the human, that squeamishness before the full humanity and its expression. I could identify a little bit with him because I had been turned down at St. Peter's once myself for wearing Bermuda shorts and bringing many people there over the years. I always warned them to bring a scarf and have their shoulders covered and fully covered kneecaps. But nonetheless, what he experienced was a moment of insight. It's like stuff just came together. He credited his non-Catholic wife with being more adept at dealing with situations like this than himself. Her wife took the little girl out to the side, kind of skinnied her little skirt down until it covered her knees, and then took her sweater and covered her bare midriff, and they went through with flying colors. And the story, of course, simply points to that which is marked so much of the church. It's moralism. Puritans get a bad rap, but you know what I mean if I say it's Puritanism. It's inability to deal with the flesh. Now, I started out by saying that Mardi Gras was particularly that opportunity to do that. But on the other side of the coin, the church has been so crimped and so cramped in the full expression of human being. When I read Carol's narration, I was reminded of a story of my own, which happened over 30 years ago down in Williamsburg, Virginia, looking at some of those old colonial buildings and taking a tour of Williamsburg. We came to this building, lovely building, upstairs hall, lots of windows, I remember, nice wooden floor, and over in the corner there were some wine vats and then some chairs stacked up. And the tour guide said, just matter-of-factly, that in this hall, on Saturday evenings, the community would gather for a dance and enjoy a glass of wine together in this space. And then on Sunday morning, the chairs would be set up and the community would return for divine worship. And that was an experience, that was a moment for me, precisely like the moment for James Carroll at the door of St. Peter's. For at that advanced age of my life, wine had never touched my lips, nor had I ever danced one step, or the two-step, or whatever they danced when I was growing up. Out of religious and moral scruples. It wasn't just that I am clumsy, which I am, but I could not dance. It was one of the things I could not do. And as I stood there that bright summer morning in this hall flooded with light, with its wine vats and its dance floor and its chairs that on Sunday were filled with worshipers, I had a moment, one of those aha moments, one of those epiphany moments when I said to myself, I realized that I was living a truncated existence, that there was a whole spectrum of life of which I was not a part, which was civil and decent and lovely and grand. And I had been so crimped that I never was able to appreciate. There was no balance in my life, no balance between Saturday night spent in an enjoyable fashion and Sunday morning spent in religious devotion. I didn't know those things could go together. And so, for me, it was also a moment of insight. And I realized that there was something lacking in my own traditional experience and nurture, and frankly, in my ministry. And so this morning, I tell these stories simply to make the point, as we are on the threshold of another Lent, that it is in the honoring of the full spectrum of our humanity that we best honor God and best find our own human fulfillment. For we have in the church not done a very good job of honoring that full spectrum. The psalmist speaks so profoundly in this regard when he speaks of the love of God. Certainly there is sin and transgression, but he says, you know, as the heavens are high above the earth, so great is God's love for those who fear him. And as far as the east is from the west, so far has God removed our transgressions from us. And then he goes on in what I think is just so profound. For God knows our frame. God remembers we are dust. And of course, he's referring, it's a reference to the creation story, where the Creator, in the midst of a garden of delight, Eden, a garden of blessing, forms the human being out of the mud, the stuff, the earth, and then breathes in the breath of life, and so that mud becomes a living being or a living soul. And what the Jewish people have known and maintained in terms of balance so much better than we in the Christian church is that the whole human being is made up of that physicality and spirituality, and that both must be honored and allowed to come to expression. And what happened in the New Testament, and you can take a line from Paul to Augustine to John Calvin, and you have a terrible distortion of the human being. Paul hinting at original sin. It's not there. It was Augustine who formulated the doctrine of original sin. And of course, it was trumped by Calvin as well in the Reformation period. But to take the creation story, which in its Jewish format is a story about the Creator creating a creature who has a physicality and spirituality, who is put to a test, who fails the test, but who is tested again and fails again and tested again and fails again. There are about four falls in those early chapters of Genesis. There's not a fall as though there was an original couple that ate an ancient apple that marked forever the rest of the human race. To do that to the story is to miss the story in all of its profundity. But that's what happened in the Christian church, so that to be human became synonymous with being sinner. And so to be human was not something to be trumpeted, but rather almost something to be ashamed of, something that needed to be screwed down and restricted and repressed. And consequently, many of us have lived with a bad conscience about that shadow side, to use Jung's term, and have lived with a denial of much of our humanity that is simply a part of being a human being with physicality and spirituality. Now, Mardi Gras at its best was the attempt to allow people to kick over the traces and have a ball. To be just a little bit naughty, if you will, but to enjoy themselves fully, fully cognizant of the fact that they were entering into a period when they were called to more sober reflection and the pursuit of spirituality. And if we would honor the image of God within us, if we would allow humanity in its wholesomeness and healthy fullness to come to expression, then we have to recognize that rhythm from feast to fast, from party and celebration to serious intention and disciplined spiritual experience. And to do this is to allow the full human to come to expression. It's not easy. I think the psalmist, as I said, expressed it as well as it can be expressed. God made us human. Why would God condemn what God created in the human that is physical and spiritual? Jesus ran into it. John, good old John, fire and brimstone preacher, looking for the end, all torn up by all of the degeneracy around him. John, who had introduced Jesus, now has questions. There was too much joy in Galilee for John's liking. There were stories about too much joy connected with Jesus' ministry for John's liking. He sent his disciples to say, "Are you the one or was I mistaken? Aren't you the real item?" And Jesus gave him a very ambiguous response. Didn't defend himself, just didn't define himself either, except by his deeds. He said, "Just go tell John what you see. The blind see, the deaf hear, the lame are walking, the prisoners are released." And then he said a very interesting thing. "Blessed or happy is the one who's not offended in me." There have been a lot of very sincere, devout religious people who've been offended in other religious people who've had too much fun, who've enjoyed life to the fullest. And Jesus couldn't have affirmed John more than he did. But he said, "You know what? The one that least in the kingdom of heaven is greater than great old John." And then he said to the people, acknowledging the fact that this is not an easy thing, he said, "You know, I don't know what to do with you." He said, "Because, you know, it's like children in the marketplace saying, 'Hey, we wanted to play weddings and you didn't want to play weddings. You didn't want to be happy. So we said, well, then let's play funerals.' And you said, 'Well, we don't want to be sad either.'" He said, "You know, I don't know what to do with you. John comes, neither eating nor drinking. You say he's got a demon. I come eating and drinking, and I'm possessed." It's not easy. Happy is the person who's not offended in another person's joy and expression of their spirituality in a celebration. It's ironic that this morning, between services, one of my dear old friends came up to me and said, "I got a letter from a friend of mine telling me how awful is Christ Community and how terrible are you." She said, "You wouldn't believe it." I said, "Oh, yes, I would." "Oh, yes, I would." Happy is the person who's not offended in the joy and the celebration as we seek to give expression to the fullness of our human nature, after all, in the image of God. So, Lent is coming, but in the meantime, have another punchki.